There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live on this Tuesday, and lots to do ranging through the next couple of hours of live local talk. Everything from senators and ice cream sandwiches to boating safety to spending in Washington to spending in Mobile, and probably a few other odds and ends in the mix. As always, text line is open for you. Phone line is open for you at 343-0106. 343-0106. Well, let's start off, though. Let's start off in speaking of spending in Mobile. I don't know if they've actually even wrapped up yet at Mobile City Council. City Council meeting today talked about a bunch of different stuff, but the one I was paying attention to is this move for the city to kick in the $2 million to help help Gulf Quest, the concrete ship, stay afloat down there on the Mobile Riverfront. And that $2 million, and we've gone through and we can talk about nuance. Lord knows, even after this morning and talking about how people understand about 70, and I don't blame you, but understand about 60 to 70% of the toll issue, and then comment on our Facebook page. We're probably going to do a frequently asked question. Don't we probably got to do that? Put that through and read this before commenting. Same thing with the Gulf Quest. While it's one of the albatrosses, right, that is hung around the neck of Mobile, it's also a situation where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. You can't just let it go. You can't just mothball it, because then you owe the feds big money. But you operated, and it cost you big money. And now you have a situation where there's 50 cents on the dollar, looks like, that's being offered by banks. Sure wish they would do that with all the rest of us out there. But a deal to get Gulf Quest out of its trouble. And this is operating costs right now, too. This isn't debt service. You know, the city of Mobile has debt service on the String of Pearls, among other items, that takes away from the money that could be used for all kinds of other things here in the city, one of them being Gulf Quest. But this is operating costs that are still owed by Gulf Quest, the entity that runs the actual museum. And that's what Mobile City Council was talking about today, whether to move up and spend this $2 million to get a bailout that includes banks and all that. And I want to run a couple different, the members of the council, I think everybody spoke on it, but I want to run a couple here. I'm going to run this first segment. Mobile Councilwoman Bess Rich, who I think lays out, I think she was the first one up to talk about it, and lays out the case for the reason why you shouldn't move forward with this $2 million, or if you do, why it should be extremely suspect and looked at with a magnifying glass. So we're going to run that cut, and we'll go to the news break, and then we'll come back and we'll get another cut that is a pro spend the money cut. All right, first, here is Councilwoman Bess Rich from just about 30 minutes ago.
All three together, even though we're reading them off as separate votes, but this applies to all three of the aspects. It is troubling the council is placed in a position to take over Gulf Quest. It is unfortunate and very sad the citizens of Mobile are put in this position. The citizens were never given an opportunity to secure their acceptance or rejection of this massive build with its operational costs and long-term debt service on the building. It was, on the other hand, decided for them by a group of people who I believe had good intentions, and they genuinely felt this project was worthy of our community's backing. However, our city and the Gulf Quest Board, without asking the community through a general referendum vote, as is commonly done in many communities for major capital projects to determine the community's interest, bonds were secured, bank loans obtained, and financing through tax credit incentives were obtained, knowing that the payback of these $80+ million of loans would require 350,000 paying visitors a year to break even. I'm not sure we've had attracted even 20,000 paying visitors. I could stand corrected on that. One other flaw in this project that is often overlooked and is a major impediment to possible future repurposing of the building is the amazing fact that it was built with only a limited number of parking spaces to service the huge facility. This building will need much thinking outside of the box, as our former Mayor Dow has expressed in the past, to turn around GolfQuest's present negative financial and administrative trajectory. I'm very concerned the financial plan before us is not comprehensive, since it only addresses paying the outstanding bank loans. It's very unfortunate, and I'm sensitive to the fact that our local banks have been put in a position to write off a large portion of those loans. One wonders what collateral or information bank loan officers initially required and analyzed in order for GolfQuest to secure these loans. Today, the city will be asked to pay $400,000 a year for 5 years towards the bank loan payback. We were told it will be a skeleton number of employees that have been working for this new, what will now be a new city department called GolfQuest, costing approximately $500,000 a year for that skeleton crew. The city will also pay the utilities and maintenance for GolfQuest at an estimated cost, which has been paying for the last 2 years, $500,000 a year. These costs were not in the original agreement with the city, hence the reason for the new agreements. These costs were not, the city or the citizens continue to pay down the $60 million bond issue that was secured for the vote, to build the bond, rather. I'll back that up. There is a $60 million bond issue, or might even be $62 million bond issue for the build, which is paid down annually. We don't even discuss that, but that's ridden through our general finances to pay down that capital that was spent to build the building. Not to mention the millions of dollars of federal funds that were originally granted to the program to secure the foundation and to build the seawall. Also, our citizens will need to pay a substantial marketing budget in the very near future to awaken the public's interest in GolfQuest. Finally, there appears to be an additional two outstanding lines of debt. The GolfQuest Foundation, or their affiliates or holding companies, secured for an additional $15 million of loans. Some of these loans are labeled as new market tax credits that are bought by investors. These credits apparently require a payback that may total the $14 million, if not more. These appears to be many unanswered questions surrounding the specifics of these types of tax credits that were sold by investors in order to fund the build, or the interior and the exhibits. The city needs to address this debt in the very near future. Mobilians, you better buckle your seatbelt, and I don't think we've seen the last of our financial obligations to this entity. The headline of the local paper yesterday said that the city is closer to taking on $2 million of the GolfQuest debt. And that may not be accurate, especially if you add the outstanding GolfQuest loans, besides the local bank paybacks, the operating costs, the marketing costs, and the personnel costs that the city will now be responsible for. The question is then, how much longer do we pour money into this facility if it can't support itself? When do we say enough is enough and cut our losses? If this initiative before us passes today, I do hope the administration looks at alternatives if the structure continues in the near future to divert essential community resources just to keep the GolfQuest doors open. If it continues to fail despite new marketing efforts, the city's financial backing, then let's look at changing the structure's purpose, mission beyond a maritime museum. I've heard from many seated here today with me, my colleagues, that there is no choice or good alternatives to go forward. I can't support this because I don't feel we are honest with ourselves, with the financial obligation before us is much more than what is outlined in these agreements. We are also not honest with ourselves by delaying the realization that GolfQuest project, as envisioned by its supporters, can't meet its financial obligations through admission projections. And we are not honest with ourselves that we may need to change its purpose sooner than later.
All right, so there's commentary from Councilwoman Bess Rich. When we come back, by the way, did you notice the homage from Bess Rich? Did you hear the homage from Bess Rich to Councilman Richardson when she said, we may need to buckle our seatbelts? Remember that with the In Vogue thing all those years ago? Buckle your seatbelts. Well, we'll get the other side. And listen, many members of the council, I think all of them, all seven, spoke on this, but I've got a pro and a con here because of the limits of time. We'll come back. He's for continuing to fund the Maritime Museum. That is Councilman Fred Richardson. We'll get to that. We get back also Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. So much to talk about with him. He joins us at 12:30. Stay close. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
If we do not get to it this hour, well, number one, you could go see, I retweeted my buddy Del Jackson, who had posted up the Doug Jones ice cream sandwich video. I think this is emblematic of the ridiculous, tribalistic, just a gotcha world of politics out there. But it's also, it's quite amusing to watch Senator try to eat his ice cream sandwich and be hounded by somebody as well. I posted the video on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. If we don't get it on this hour, we will play that audio for you coming up next hour. As Doug Jones is at an event out in Colorado, he's trying to eat his ice cream sandwich and he's getting asked political questions. That's tough. You're a politician, you're just trying to have your ice cream sandwich. All right. Continue the discussion. What has happened? I think, as the show came on today, they were not finished, I don't think, down at the at Mobile City Council. They may be finished by now. But they were talking about funding for GolfQuest. And once again, just to do a repeat primer, just so you know the situation, and you heard Councilwoman Bess Rich reference this. She said, my colleague said there's no real good decision here. The way I see it from the facts that I've gotten on this is that you have, although, listen, we have disagreement about the outcome of those facts. Like my friend Rob Holbert from Landnap, he and I are don't see it the same way. I see it. I looked at the language of the way the GolfQuest Maritime Museum was set up through this grant money that was actually a ferry dock. When the city made a big deal about that ferry dock that went in down there at GolfQuest and Cooper Riverside Park, that was a compliance feature of getting the loan in the first place to build GolfQuest all those years ago. It wasn't just they decided we needed a ferry dock. They had to do that as part of being compliant with the money we got in federal dollars. Now, we had the match, of course, that we're paying on the $26 million, but the feds, they had the bulk of the money that went in there, and it was out of a transportation grant. Couldn't we use that now? Wouldn't it be nice now to have that money for the bridge? But back then, they did this, and you had federal money that came in, and then you had a match, right? This is kind of the normal protocol. But to not have a clawback from the feds, you have to operate that thing. And I think they got approval for the Maritime Museum and ferry dock. And if you don't live up to that, the way I read the documents I've looked at, the feds can say, hey, Mobile, where's the rest of our money? In other words, if you don't live up to what you said it was going to be, you have to pay the feds back the whole megilla of this versus just servicing the debt for your half. I mean, it is it's an untenable situation. I don't know, unwinnable. Untenable right now situation. You're truly damned if you do and damned if you don't. I mean, it is really the definition of that. And that's where the city sits. That's the situation that the city is in. And the question being asked, so many people say, well, just walk away from it. Just close it down, which would be interesting. Would the city actually go fine itself for blight? But they can't because if they just shut it down, then they owe all the money. the money that the city is on for and the money that was put in by the feds. You have to pay the feds back. So it is a tough situation. But you heard Councilwoman Bess Rich, I think, make some points. But the problem is a lot of that's in the rear view. We should have. Why didn't we? I get it. I say the same things. The problem is we're sitting in this situation now. What is the... There's not a best way out of it. What's the... Go technical here. What's the least bad way to get out of this? Okay. I told you I'd get you another opinion here. So Councilwoman Bess Rich is really questioning it. Councilman Fred Richardson is excited about the future of Gulf Quest. Let's go to that audio.
I'd like to say something.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I would be supporting Gulf Quest today. It's not that we have not had problems. I don't have anything against what my colleague had to say about Gulf Quest. We've had problems with Gulf Quest from the beginning. And I believe with our former mayor, Michael C. Dow, at the helm, leading this effort, I believe that Gulf Quest will be successful, and I made some points. I gave them some points that were on my mind yesterday that I think would help them. First of all, the board focused on visitors, how many visitors they could bring into this city without focusing on the citizens in the city of Mobile. You better believe, if we can't get our own citizens to come out to it, you can forget about the visitors. An effort has got to be made to make sure every citizen in this city is aware of Gulf Quest and its importance. One way to do that is have a diverse board. There is an exhibit in Gulf Quest dealing with the Clotilda, where you can walk up and punch the Clotilda button, and a light will come on in the People's Republic of Benin, in the city of Ouida, at the port of Ouida, and it'll blink, the light will keep blinking until it gets to go through all of these bottles of water until it gets to the city of Mobile where the Clotilda went down. And I guarantee you not one citizen in Africatown is aware that that is true. It should not be. That's why we must have a diverse board, a board that looks like the makeup of the city of Mobile. We must have a board. And you know, getting bankers, lawyers, and all of that is good. You need somebody with some imagination to come up with something that these citizens will come down there and visit the Gulf Quest. One thing we're doing as we vote today, we have a stipulation in this resolution saying when a citizen of Mobile comes to this Gulf Quest Museum, they can get in half price. And we was pushing for them to get in free based on the amount of money we're giving Gulf Quest. But at least they can get in for half price. And if there are four other people with them, they can get in for half price too. At least we're trying to give back to the citizens in the city of Mobile. So we're very proud of that. I'm looking forward for great things, looking forward to great things happening at Gulf Quest. And I believe if we give hope a chance, give this new director, Michael C. Dow, a chance, we're all going to be proud of the Gulf Quest Maritime Museum.
Give hope a chance. Hey, by the way, we don't make it. If you can help me remember here, I need to make a note here when I go to the break to try to get Councilman Richardson on the show with us, because I got to figure out, I'm probably completely wrong. There's no way that I'm right that the minute and a half or so that he discussed diversity on the board at GolfQuest. That what is he trying to say there? Is it a quid pro quo? Is it what's the makeup of the board now? Put the hay down there where the horses get after it. I want to know what Councilman Richardson meant about that. And you know what? A lot of y'all had now on Twitter and on the text line have commented on it. I thought the same thing. I didn't want to derail the whole thing with Councilwoman Bess Rich. But how long has Bess lived here? How long has Ms. Rich lived here? And she's not the only one. There's one on our staff, Kane, our traffic guy, Kane, if you're listening. It's Gulf. It is the Gulf of Mexico. It's not the Gulf. Gulf is what's played on the course there, right? Gulf is that thing that you swim in and try not to get Vibrio in, right? That's the Gulf. There's Gulf again. I mean, it's 2 days in a row. I really want to stop this because I feel jerky. Yesterday, I had to remind or teach Bill Britt from the Alabama Political Reporter that it was Mobile, not Mobile. And now I have to tell a member of the Mobile City Council that it's not, it's Gulf, Gulf, Gulf Quest, not Gulf Quest. And by the way, too, somebody said, what's your disagreement with Rob? So, well, Lord knows, line them up. No. Rob Holbert from Lanyap, he feels like the city shouldn't move to pay this money back because he said there's not an example of the feds ever having a clawback or that he knew of on this money, that you could basically default on the deal with the feds and not have to pay the money. I don't like doing business that way. I don't do business that way in my personal life. I don't want our city doing to be under the worry that one day they're going to come asking for the money. I mean, it is a bad deal either way. That's why they get paid the big bucks, right? To discuss it down at the Mobile City Council. Hey, Todd Stacey's on the way. We'll talk with him. Also, if it happens at the beginning of next hour, we'll get it in before the show's over. Senator Doug Jones eating an ice cream sandwich. It's very important.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Text line's open at 343-0106, but I want y'all to text and listen because I want you to say hello to my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
Good, man. And just again, you know, we're going to tell folks how to get your email in their inbox every weekday morning and now with the also the weekend update. But here I open this up, and number one story in the stack, Governor Ivey convenes prison study group. It's like we've been here before, and we're still here. I remember former Governor Bentley convening a prison study group.
Yeah, I think there have probably been a few task forces over the years and commissions and everything. This specifically, and they met yesterday in Montgomery for the first time, and this specifically is looking at what kind of legislation and or, you know, policy changes are going to be needed to, number one, avoid a lawsuit from the Department of Justice that we're kind of, you know, they're kind of breathing down our neck right now. And number two, avoid a takeover ordered by the federal district judge here in Montgomery, Myron Thompson. So it, in fairness, it is pretty specific to those very specific problems, right? The Department of Justice conducted this long investigation, and they reported earlier this year that the state is in violation of the Eighth Amendment. The unsafe conditions, prisoners, because of the conditions in prisons, are under threat. They're in danger of being attacked, molested, things like that. It's just really bad. And they've said, we're going to sue you. We've got the cause and everything to sue you. But they're trying to work with the state on a plan to avoid that. And that's what this commission is supposed to come up with. Is put those recommendations into legislation that maybe we'll see in February when the legislature gets back in town.
But we got the special, right? I mean, that's okay. So a couple things. Number one, I want to point this out again, and this is, I keep doing this so people don't just say, wow, that's just politics. This is DOJ under President Donald Trump. This is not, and people say, oh, well, there's still a lot of holdovers from the Obama administration. Actually, the people running things are, part of President Trump's doing. And they're saying, Alabama, you can't do this.
That's exactly right. And not just President Trump, but for the large part of this, it was under Jeff Sessions. Yeah.
So right. This is not some. Okay. Exactly. It was Jeff Sessions, in that position. I want people to understand, because they quickly will discount stuff like this when they want to whistle past the graveyard and go, oh, that's just part of some big liberal Washington. No, y'all, it isn't. It means we're in, at least according to the DOJ under President Trump, and like you said, under Jeff Sessions at that time, we are in direct violation of the Eighth.
Yeah, and it's, look, think what you will about the policy and how the Justice Department looks at the Constitution, the Eighth Amendment. Alabama is certainly not the only state or the first state to have this problem. California has had it. Arkansas had it. Several states have had this very problem.
Can you tell them what happened in California? I've done this enough. Maybe somebody else tell them, folks, what happened when California got in trouble.
I'm not an expert on it, but they were facing a very similar situation and never reached a resolution with the court. And so what ended up happening was a court-ordered massive release of prisoners. And it's, of course, everything's bigger in California as far as population and all that. So it was pretty significant. That was unpopular. But they also mandated a tax increase, a state tax increase.
The feds mandated a state tax increase.
Yeah, which can happen. And so, that's exactly kind of what we're facing in Alabama. Now, that's not the DOJ. That's the court. The federal court here in Montgomery has found that we don't have enough corrections officers per inmate, right? We're not just really overcrowded. I think we're at 167% of capacity.
And we started at what, 193% or something like that?
Yeah, it's gotten a little better. Gotten a little better. So we're not only overcrowded for the facilities, but we're understaffed. And that's it all works together, right? That creates really violent and dangerous situations, plus you have the facilities themselves that are just really old and aging. So it's a real big mess. All of this is getting looked at right now by this task force that is supposed to develop some legislation, and we'll see. Today was their first meeting, but you've got some people in the room that have skin in the game. You've got the Attorney General's office, you've got the legislature, you've got DOC and the governor's office, of course. And so they're all talking, they're all communicating and not talking past each other, which I think is probably a good thing.
I hate to be a negative ninny on this, but special, we were told, would be sometime in September, right? And session has been over since May, and it's now later half of July. Why didn't we start on this earlier?
Well, there's a good I was the one that reported from some pretty good sources that we'd have a special session sometime in the fall, September, October. That has now changed. The governor's office, the legislature itself.
So that is going to be February. We don't have to have.
Right. Why not just go ahead and wait till February? And here's the reason.
We were told
why.
We couldn't do that because of this time frame, right?
Right. I think there were some alarmist folks during the regular session that wanted to push the legislation through, whatever legislation they had through, using the DOJ. But here's where it boils down to. DOJ right now is in negotiations with the governor's office, with this group, to try to figure out, all right, what does the Alabama Department of Corrections have to do in order to avoid this lawsuit? They're negotiating in good faith. You mentioned it's the Trump appointees. Jay Towne is a U.S. attorney for North Alabama, and that's the attorney, U.S. attorney lead here. They're negotiating right now. Now, everybody says that the data that they're going to be using to figure out how to go about this, as far as the sentencing and the current prison population, that all won't be ready until at the earliest October. And so, do you want to rush it? You're not even going to have the data until late September, October. Then you got to take that and develop legislation. Why rush into it that way? And You can save money by not calling a special session. And here's the whole point. If DOJ told them, you better get this done as soon as possible, you better believe they'd call a special session. But they have confidence, and they're okay with that. That, okay, look, you'll wait till the regular session. It's more likely to get passed then. And so that, they're all on the same page.
Okay, and you pointed out rightfully so, it is multifaceted from the actual, you know, from overpopulation to understaffing and unsafe conditions. But let's talk about the overcrowding. The solution to that that's been discussed is a brick and mortar discussion. That is building new prisons in the state of Alabama. And short of people taking me up on my brilliant idea to offer a new specialty tag in the state of Alabama helping prisons, or they would have passed a lottery for prisons, short of that, how are we going to get the money to build, what was it, $800 million for the prison build? And I would argue that that'll probably be higher. It'll probably be a billion.
Yeah, about 900, I think. $900 million to a billion. I mean, somewhere in that range. So, yeah, and that's part of all this. And here's why. You've got some really, and it's not necessarily the overcrowding, but you've got some really dilapidated, old, just places are falling down facilities. And so that's a problem for a couple of reasons. You know, they're easy to escape. They're dangerous. The guards don't feel safe because the security systems aren't up to date. They don't even have the electrical infrastructure to have the modern system. So you've got dangerous facilities, and because of the way they're built, they're sleeping on top of each other. So yeah, the governor wants to build 3, maybe 4 brand new prisons, and which would take care of those two problems, right? Like.
Right.
The security would be better. The accommodation, right? The way it would be designed would, by its very nature, be safer and require less, require fewer corrections officers. So that would be kind of two birds with one stone. It would not reduce the prison population, but it would better be able to accommodate such a massive prison population. But you're right. It's a huge price tag. They think they can pay for it, not through new money, not through you know, any kind of new tax or anything.
How about tolls? Prison tolls.
Well, they want to pay for it. I'm sure that would go over great. They want to. How about let's do a toll and let's raise the lodging tax in Baldwin County just to pay for the prison. That would be it.
Welcome to my stirring the soup, man.
Well, they actually think they can pay for it just through the money saved, because they spend millions every year, $50 to $100 million every year, just refurbishing these old facilities, and through savings from not having to have as many corrections officers.
Let's explain that real quick. And people hadn't followed it, that in talking about this over the years, it was counterintuitive, but it was explained, and by people I think they're pretty fair-minded on this, said, hey, you know, if you look at the ADOC budget, how much of that is in staffing issues, and if they build high-tech prisons, you can have fewer corrections officers per inmate, right? I mean, it works out that the cost of pay and payroll goes down. At least that's what I'm told.
Yeah. Well, so right now with the facilities we have, you have to have a ton of corrections officers, just because. I mean, look, I don't know if you get the press releases. I do every day, and there's generally one every day about prisoners escaping.
It's more. What do they call them? They call those work release facilities. I think it's way more release than work.
Well, yeah. So, you know, these facilities are pretty old. They're easy to escape. They're dangerous. And so, just the way they're built, it's like big warehouses, you know. And so, a modern prison facility with modern technology, modern security, would not require the staffing levels of all those corrections officers, and so you save a little bit of money that way. So they save money from having to spend so much on maintenance and then overhead costs with the corrections officers. So they think they can take that savings, apply it over several years, and pay for the prison itself.
All right, let's do this. Can you hold on while we run to the break?
Sure.
Okay, run the news break. We'll come back. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. So the interesting piece of information there. You got something brand new. You would have this morning, too, if you checked your inbox and had that email that the move here, the special is not happening. They're going to do it in regular session, but the investigation panel has been convened here. Listen, I wish we were spending money on something else, too, y'all, but I mean, this is real. This is a real thing.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and always good to talk to my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And the top story up on the email this morning was what we've been talking about, and this question about the prisons and prison reform in Alabama. Somebody has yet to sign up for that, Todd. How do they make that stop? How do they get that email in their inbox?
Oh, it's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. And right at the top, there's a button that says subscribe. Just click that, enter your name and your email. It's all secure, and it's free, no cost at all. But enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. You'll get an email from me every weekday morning and from Caroline Beck on Sundays. We run down the top stories of the day, both from the state, from state government, state politics, but also Washington, D.C., including headlines from around the state and all the front pages from the state's newspapers. So, yeah. Go to aldailynews.com. We'd love to have you as a subscriber.
And this is the prison thing we'll talk about and see. I don't know, is there going to be, do you think anything from this panel between now and session, will they have like pressers if they, or will they just kind of keep it under their hat and then roll that out during session? What's your best guess on that?
I think they'll probably have one or two more public meetings, but they really just need to meet in private and work out these proposals, right? What I'm interested to see, and we're actually digging into this right now, hopefully have a story up later next week, but I'm digging into, all right, you've already done a lot of criminal justice reform. They've done sentencing reform. A lot of what's left, a lot of who's left in Alabama prisons is not they've gotten rid of the nonviolent offenders, right? They've gotten rid of the ticky-tack, you got stopped for weed, mm-hmm. Type of people in prison. So what's left is, violent criminals and habitual offenders. And so when it comes to reducing the prison population, reducing that overcrowding problem, those are the two areas that you've really got to focus on. Now, nobody's going to agree to releasing violent criminals. Nobody. But when it comes to habitual offenders, that may be an opportunity. When, back in the 90s, these kind of three strikes and you're out laws were really popular. That was a Clinton thing, and states sort of did the same thing, and Alabama was one of them. So, yeah, if you got stopped for weed once, that's one thing. But if you got stopped twice and three times, then you might get locked up for good, or at least for a really long time. So that may be something that they look at. In terms of overcrowding in the prisons. And another part of that, and you hear these anecdotes, but it's backed up with data. When somebody goes to jail for a nonviolent drug offense, it's really a lot more likely that they will come out of prison as a violent criminal. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to do something about that. We've got to do something about the time that they actually spend in jail and make sure it's not a training ground for people that weren't violent actually becoming violent. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they come up with. And look, just like the Tollmobile, this may sound like a boring, nobody cares kind of topic, and not a whole lot of folks were talking about the bridge until it became known that you may have to pay $6 to cross it, right?
Well, not just the bridge. It was when they said, hey, you also have to pay to go through the tunnel. That's what changed.
Right,
that's
right,
when it
absolutely
changed.
So it's going to cost you, and that's what got everybody talking. It's the biggest issue in the state right now. Well, look, the same thing could happen with the prisons, because if the federal court and the Department of Justice come in and say, okay, number one, we've got to release prisoners, maybe violent prisoners, and number two, we're going to mandate that the state raise a certain amount of revenue through taxes, that's going to cost us, and that'll get folks' attention. So we better be paying attention now before we, all of a sudden it becomes, you know, here's the price tag and here's the result. So yeah, it's good that they're trying to stay ahead of this, but we'll see.
Hey, is there anything more on something you and I talked a few times about, that given the options, if, because listen, let's just talk about it frankly. This is why I'd like to point out that this is something they got to do, because it's not going to be in any way, shape, or form politically popular, which means people are not going to want to get on board supporting things in Montgomery. But if they're, and because of the reasons of there being lots of jobs in people's districts and all that, they don't want to move prisons. I get it. But if Governor Ivey can't get support in the legislature, you and I had talked about there was this option out where she might be able to find private entities to build the prison and then make a deal through the executive branch to basically we'd rent the space, put ADOC people in there, but we'd rent the space. Is that still a deal? Is that still talked about?
Absolutely. Well, they've got a couple of options as far as that goes, but a lease build or a build lease situation is very much still on the table. That's probably not for this panel to decide. That the governor's office can go ahead with that as they want to. They've already put a request for proposals out there. I know that there are several companies that have shown interest in, you know, building these. Some are the build lease kind of thing. Some are, okay, we're just going to build it for you and sell it to you. Yeah, I mean, that could work in terms of helping alleviate the costs, all right, the upfront cost. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's still very much on the table, just as a way to get it done.
Okay. One last question here. We've got a couple minutes, and I want you to, because this story is also in the stack below the prison story. You have a note here. I guess it's, you know, it's the pre-file season, and that State Senator Arthur Orr has said recently that, when you quoted him here, I don't like being reactionary, but given the lack of specificity in our current law, I think it needs to be addressed, and other states have already plowed some ground. He's talking about harsher penalties for those who mess with consumer goods, to quote you. In other words, a Class C felony for licking ice cream. So that's going to put Class C felony put somebody in prison. So we're going to, you talk about nonviolent offenders, somebody who's licking ice cream is now going to be part of the prison population in Alabama?
Yeah, look.
Way to go, Arthur Orr.
My reporter Mary Sell, when she told me she had this scoop, I thought, well, I've got to run that, because it's just kind of funny. But yeah, you know, we've heard about seen the viral videos of people licking ice cream,
right?
The Bluebell ice cream bucket, you know, and then putting it back, which is just disgusting and gross.
Agreed.
And so Arthur Orr looked into it. He's a senator from up in Decatur, and looked into it and said, well, look, if that happened in Alabama, I'm not sure that the penalty would be, first of all, that they could really be charged with anything, or that it's that specific, and that maybe we need to beef up our consumer protection laws to deter that kind of thing. So, yeah, he's looking at pre-filing legislation to do that. I guess we'll see it when it comes. But, yeah, it kind of makes me wonder if we should be that specific about things. I don't think his bill will say if you lick ice cream, you go to jail. I think it's probably more allowing law enforcement to, you know, more tools generally for consumers who mess with other consumers' goods, right? And a lot of times it's consumer protection is about somebody selling you a product and what they've done. This would, I think what he's getting at is, what if another consumer, another person, you know, messes with a good that you're going to buy? Does our law account for that? And so I guess we'll see.
Well, I mean, fair enough. I don't want somebody licking my ice cream beforehand. I want, you know, Dalton and I even talked about it weeks ago in this, the idea of, I think Dalton suggests, you know, some kind of public shaming where they walk around cleaning up in that grocery store with like a t-shirt on, I'm the person that licked the ice cream, and they can pay some outrageous penalties. That's okay. It's just the Class C felony, which I think in Alabama means 1 year in jail, right? Punishable by a year in jail. We just get done talking about overcrowding. And Senator Orr, who, listen, when Senator Orr's talking about the ABC board, or the facilities, I'm on his side. And this one, I got to go, let's just make sure this doesn't get out of control, that we have I don't want people licking the ice cream, but I just don't know if it's amounts to Class C felony kind of stuff.
Look, I'm all for the, you know, the sandwich sign walking around with it, or a t-shirt. You know, you, it's, I don't know. The T-shirt should say, "I'm a jerk. Yes. I have no, I have no shame, and I licked your ice cream. You know, please, please shame me. Please make fun of me." But yeah, I think Arthur Orr kind of just wants a law to say, maybe to have penalties, but also to remind people, hey, if you do.